We were concerned when he did share with us around the back that he lost his soul, but he then showed it was only on his foot, so that's good. It was in 1979 that I began a 9-year stint as a postie at the Guernsey Post Office. I know some of you probably weren't even born then, and I'd already been 14 years left school. And one of the things that we had to do, obviously, was learn deliveries, delivery rounds. When you first become a postman, you don't have your own round. You have to fill in for all the blokes that go sick, go on holiday. And so your task as a sub-postie is to fill in the gaps. And you may turn up one morning not knowing what round you're going to be on. So you were taught a number of rounds. How they taught you was obviously you had to learn all the sorting inside the post office so that you could set all the letters in the order that the houses come. So that's quite a task, and the average round had 500 houses on it. The first day you went out with the guy that did the round regularly and you did nothing. You just followed everywhere he went. The second day, you did one half, he did the other half, so we both had an early finish. Then the third other half, and then that was classed as you know that round. Now you may not be on that round for another 6 months, and suddenly somebody pulls a sickie. It was often on a Saturday because they'd been out on the Friday and phoned in sick on the Saturday morning, and it was a 5:30 start in the morning. And then you also had to go back at 5:30 in the evenings to learn the inward sorting and the outward sorting. So you had to learn every single round in Guernsey what was in which pigeonhole. So then you had to learn the outward sorting, OPS and IPS, outward postal sorting. So you needed to know all your London areas. You had to know all your counties. So it was a massive learning curve. Then, after a while, you could sign for a section. So it meant that you had your own round and you were on a 3-week rotation with two other guys. And one section that I signed in was 2-letter rounds on bikes and one in the van delivering parcels. The parcel round that I was on encompassed 12-letter rounds. So my postal round was 5,000 houses. You're normally given a week to learn a parcel round. However, I went out with the postie on the first day and then he went sick. And so the second day of a 5,000 house postal round, I was on my own. And I had to learn that round by going around, and it was probably about a 30-mile route, I guess. My round was if you started at Cobo Post Office, everything north of that to Lancres was my delivery. For 40 years, I have had nightmares of being on a round I don't know. It's been reoccurring. It has never left me. Such was the stress of that job, and you never knew. Sometimes if you overslept, because it was 5:30 in the morning, it was easy to sleep through the alarm, and you'd hear the phone ring by your bedside. Oh, good morning, Mr. Fairbrush. Will you be joining us at the post office today? And if you were late, there was a signing on table when you came into the sorting office. There were 120 blokes that knew you were late, and they were stamping and jumping on their sorting frames and making a I've known people to go ill rather than turn up late. But for 40 years, I still have that dream. I've been mentally scarred by that job. I still have the dream that I've put on a round that I don't know. Those dreams still haunt me. It's interesting that the subject we're looking at this morning is the story of Joseph, who also was haunted by the dreams that he had. We read the story this morning, and you have to bear in mind that at this stage, and he was of the age where it was possible to engage your mouth before you engage your brain. I don't think it matters how old you are, you can still fall for that. Engage brain before mouth. No, it's so much easier from the overflow of the heart, the mouth speaks, doesn't it, sometimes? But here was this guy, Joseph, 17 years of age. His father, Jacob, had settled in the land of Canaan. And he had 12 sons, Joseph being the second youngest. And it was unfortunate that Jacob showed considerable favoritism towards Joseph. Very bad of a father. Sarah, my daughter, a little while ago, jokingly said, Am I your favorite daughter? What a question to ask a father of two. I said, I couldn't possibly answer that question. Of course you're my favorite. No. But Jacob didn't. And he showed favor to Joseph. And we know full well that he, first of all, he showed favoritism, probably because he was around home for a lot longer than his older brothers were. He showed favoritism in that he dressed him in a wonderful robe. Imagine, the dress of the day was probably a beigey sort of grey overgarment. And there's Joseph in the middle of the field with red, white, blue, orange, green, red, you name it, and his gown was multitude of colours. He stood out from everybody like a sore thumb. And something else that wound his brothers up is when Joseph was finished in the fields with his brothers, he would go home and tell his father negative things about his brothers. He bad-mouthed his brothers. So he wasn't in a good place as far as his brothers were concerned. In fact, we read this morning that his brothers hated him. Hated him. In fact, if you go to the original Hebrew of that word hate, it was bitterness and hostility. I mean, what an environment to have to go out into every day, bitterness and hostility amongst your own family. Whenever they spoke to him, it says, they spoke with contempt. Wow. Now, you would have thought that with all this hatred, all this bitterness, that when he was out in the field, he would keep a very low profile. He wouldn't arouse more reason to be hated. I'm sure you're familiar with Martin Luther King's speech that he made on the 28th of August in 1963. Yeah? I have a dream. I have a dream. It is a dream deeply rooted in the American dream. I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed. I have a dream. And he went on and on. And it brought such a unity amongst the various races within America at the time. However, 5 years later, he was assassinated by a person who did not go along with his dream. Yes, Martin Luther had a dream and he expressed that dream. Unfortunately, Joseph also too had a dream and made the mistake of expressing his dream. Let's read again those words that we read in Genesis 37, verse 6. Please hear this dream which I have dreamed. There we were, binding sheaves in the field. Then behold, my sheaf arose and stood upright, and indeed your sheaves, he's speaking to his brothers, stood all around and bowed down to my sheaf. And his brother said to him, shall you indeed reign over us? Or shall you indeed have a dominion over us? So they hated him even more for his dreams and for his words. Yes, it was possible for them to hate him even more. If only he'd known about Ecclesiastes that said that there is a time to speak and a time to be silent. But unfortunately for Joseph, he was on a roll. You know when they say about, well, what do you do when you dig yourself a hole? Well, he just carried on digging a deeper hole. And he turned up another day and he said, oh, by the way, he said, I've had another dream. You won't believe it. This time, my dream. Let me tell you about my dream. I dreamed another dream, and this time the sun, the moon, and the 11 stars bowed down before me. So he told it to his father and his brothers. Not just his brothers this time. His father and his brothers, and his father rebuked him and said to him, what is this dream that you've dreamed? Shall your mother and I and your brothers indeed come to bow down to the earth before you? I tell you, hatred and anger and bitterness is a toxic mix. And we know the story. And if you don't know the story, I really encourage you, because we're not going to be going into this any further in the series until the very final chapter of Genesis. Finally, the brothers said, enough is enough, and they wanted to kill him. Except one of them intervened on his behalf and said, well, no, let's not kill him. And so they sold him into slavery. They'd had enough of him and his dreams. Well, you might well ask, well, what have we got to learn from this story this morning? If you continue to read this story right to the end of Genesis, the one thing that you pick out is that Joseph was not defined by this one little piece of his life. And that, folks, we are not defined by a single episode in our lives. We know that Joseph eventually oversaw Potiphar's house. And everything that Potiphar had in his house was at Joseph's disposal. Potiphar didn't have to worry about a thing. Then he got falsely accused of rape. He then became imprisoned unjustly. And ultimately saved two entire nations, the Egyptian nation and the to become Israel nation, from starvation. This teenage episode that Joseph went through, this 17-year-old, was not the end of the story. But God used it in such an amazing way to bring glory back to him. Folks, our God is a redeeming God. And I'm sure there were times when Joseph looked back at that period of his life with regret. I bet he looked back acknowledging that he'd made a bit of a mess of it. He could have done things better. He could have learned his lessons and engaged brain instead of mouth. But ultimately, it was God's plan. Ultimately, it was God's plan. Even the line of Jesus was preserved because of the way life went in Joseph's situation, which is quite a thought. And you're sitting here this morning and I'm standing here not knowing really what's going on in any of your lives to any great extent. But you may well be sitting here this morning saying, I wish I'd kept my mouth shut. I had my time again, I wouldn't have started that relationship. I wish I'd been a better parent. I wish I'd tried harder as a wife or as a husband. You see, folks, we might suffer from the mistakes that we've made. We may be hurting because of the mistakes we've made. We might even be beating ourselves up with regret. We may have even hurt others because of our mistakes. But God, this is the news that I want to bring out of this morning. God has the power to redeem and use even our worst sins for our ultimate good. Isn't that an incredible thing to say? God can use all of that. I've spoken on this verse in Isaiah before. It's a wonderful verse. Isaiah 43:18 says, "Forget the former things. Do not dwell on the past. See, I am doing a new thing. Now it springs up." Or as Paul eloquently put it, and Simon's already quoted this verse this morning, Romans 8:28, "And we know," let's listen to this carefully, "we know all things work together for good to those who love God and to those who are called according to his purpose." Did you hear that? All things. All things work together for good. Now that's something hard to take, because you've got in your mind things in your life, you think, how on earth can God bring good out of that for me? I believe God's word this morning. And if it says all things, it doesn't mean some things. It means all things. Joseph did not let that boastful teenager define him. So we fast forward the story, you will know that he came into a place where he ended up being prime minister of the entire nation of Egypt. And there came a point, because of his wisdom and the prophetic insight God gave him about there being 7 years of plenty in Egypt, and to prepare in those 7 years for the 7 years of drought and starvation and deprivation, he prepared so much so that his brothers had to come into Egypt to buy grain. And they met with Joseph, not knowing who he was initially. Obviously, 22 years had passed since they sold him into slavery. He had changed. He was in Egyptian clothing. Totally different man. But when he finally came face to face with his brothers and revealed to them who he now was, he said these words in Genesis 45. "I am Joseph, your brother, who you sold into Egypt. But now, do not therefore be grieved or angry with yourselves because you sold me. For God sent me before you to preserve life. For these 2 years, the famine has been in the land, and there are still 5 years in which there will be neither plowing nor harvesting. And God sent me before you to preserve a posterity for you in the earth and to save your lives by a great deliverance. So now it was not you who sent me here, but God. And he has made me a father to Pharaoh and a lord of all his house." So what he was saying here, my dear brothers, When I boasted about these dreams, when I paraded up and down with my wonderful coat of many colours and really wound you up, when I went home and told lies about you to our father, when I was falsely accused of rape, when I was unjustly imprisoned for 2 years, when I was forgotten by you whilst I was in this foreign land, God sent me. Not you. Not me. God sent me. That's the all things that were working out for my good. Not some things, everything was used by God. The small things, the seemingly insignificant things, the big things. He could turn to his brothers and say, it was not you, it was God. Paul said in Ephesians 1 verse 11, in him we have obtained an inheritance, having been predestined according to the purpose of him who works all things according to the counsel of his will. So folks, wherever you are this morning, you have to trust that God will work all things for our good. Because he either does or he doesn't. And God's not a liar. God's promises are yea and amen in Christ Jesus. So if he promises he's going to work all things for our good, he's going to work all things for our good. You've probably read this poem before, but I want to read it again because it's of such significance with what we're looking here. You may not even like who you are this morning. It might not be your brothers or your sisters you are bitter with, that are angry with. It may be with yourself. Russell Kefler wrote this wonderful poem. You are who you are for a reason. You're part of an intricate plan. You're a precious and perfect, unique design called God's special woman or man. You look like you look for a reason. How God made no mistake. He knit you together within the womb. You're just what he wanted to make. The parents you had were the ones he chose. And no matter how you may feel, they were custom designed with God's plan in mind. And they bear the master's seal. No, that trauma you faced was not easy. And God wept that it hurt you so. But it was allowed to shape your heart so that into his likeness you'd grow. You are who you are for a reason. You've been formed by the master's rod. You are who you are, beloved, because there is a God. I find in this story, and when I first sat down and saw what I had to study, I thought, what are we going to get out of this? But the thing that struck me as huge significance, the one thing that Joseph got wrong in terms of his dreams, God used dreams to make him a blessing. Because when he was in prison, he met the butler and the baker who were also in prison. And they both had dreams that they couldn't understand. And Joseph could. He could have well said, I've had enough with dreams. I'm not going anywhere near that with a barge pole. But the very thing that got him where he was the thing that God used to get him out of where he was. Because not only could he interpret the dreams of the butler and the baker, on their recommendation, when they got restored, and Pharaoh had a dream, Joseph got his get out of jail card, if you like, on the basis of that, and was able to foretell the future of what was then the largest kingdom in the whole of the world. He saved a nation. That encourages me, folks, that God can use those things that we failed at, those things that we regret, those things that we would never choose to touch again with a barge pole. God uses the very things that bring us down to raise us up. It was Graham Kendrick that wrote, "Though we are weak, his grace is everything we need. We're made of clay, but this treasure is within. He turns our weaknesses into his opportunities so that the glory goes to him." This story ends on a very, very positive note. All those years of separation, regret, the brothers regretted what they had done. The father regretted the fact that he had showed favoritism to his son and lost his son. Joseph had regrets. And yet we see at the end of this story, God is glorified to an enormous extent. So folks, I encourage you this morning to forget the former things. Do not dwell on the past. Why? Because God is doing a new thing in your life. And he will bring it to a place that will give him glory and do good for you. What could be better than that? I chose a song that I wanted us to sing. I know I've never sung it here, but you have many years ago. Enough folk here know it. But I thought this is the only song that can really go with what we're looking at. And it was written by Chris Bowater, who also wrote the song, "Here I Am, Wholly Available, As For Me I Will Serve the Lord." And he came to Guernsey quite frequently years ago. But he wrote this song, "Make me, Lord, a dreamer for your kingdom. Plant in my heart heavenly desires. Grant faith that can say impossibilities shall be, and vision, lest a world should perish not knowing thee." We'll stand and we'll sing that now. Thank you.